Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome to the Waypoint UK podcast, episode 4 already, with me, Mike Diver, senior editor at Waypoint. And today I'm joined with two people, insert or delete as you feel appropriate, by two people, Laura Kate Dale of Let's Play Video Games and Julian Benson of Kotaku UK. How are you both doing today?
I'm good. It's really nice to get invited along. So yeah, let's talk about video games and such.
I'm really well. I'm looking forward to talking about some computer games and seeing what we've got for the
computer
year ahead.
Computer and video games. I remember that.
That used to be a thing.
3 years working on a PC website. It's like I still need to try to remember to include other consoles whenever I'm thinking about computer games and video games.
And also video games.
Yeah, those two.
All kinds of things. But one of the reasons I brought you two together on this podcast, because I wanted to kick off this new year by looking into the more journalism side of games journalism. We throw the J word around a lot. You know, but and I come from a background where I studied journalism, you know, so you did a bit of investigative stuff, you know, you sort of sniff around and you find stuff out and that's how you get your news. You know, whereas a lot of the way that the games news cycle works is kind of quite publisher provided, right? Quite PR provided some of the time. But you two have both done amazing things lately. I mean, Laura, obviously you've got a reputation, I suppose, maybe it precedes you for revealing details of things. When you've the sources enough to verify them, and Julian, you've done amazing stuff at Kotaku. You did an amazing deep dive on Star Citizen, which was just incredible amounts of research, way beyond what, you know, I mean, you're called the news editor there, right? Which is ridiculous when you put that much of work into it. So that's really cool to have you both here, and we can hopefully talk about the serious side of reporting in video games. So yeah, just to start off, I suppose, why do you both do what you do? Like, what's your motivation to be, you know, kind of at the vanguard of reporting events and, you know, the changes and evolution and disruption in this industry of ours, I suppose?
So basically, it sort of comes out of what I find interesting. Like, the first thing I did when I was writing about games was I had an evening shift working for PC Games N, where there was an element of original reporting, but largely it was sort of scouring to see what had been announced. And after a year of that became, you could do it by rote. Like, it was really easy to sort of just like, here's a press release, throw some jokes into there, turn it into something a bit more exciting. But it was certainly, it wasn't very much in the way of actually doing journalism. And that's something ever since I've always found quite interesting. Like, it's sort of the thing which I get enthused by is when I'm actually researching a story and I know that I'm getting something that no one else has. I mean, it's sort of like, there are times when sort of you hear about something and someone says, we can't say any more about it, which to me, I suddenly find is quite an exciting thing. Like, right, I want to find out what that thing is, because if you're not telling me, then it must be something quite interesting.
Yeah. Because those kind of junket situations, like if you know, people get thrown into a room with producer or a director or something, like 9 times out of 10, they will not give you everything you want, will they? And in the worst possible situations, there's one or two people there who are going to tell you when you overstep the mark and will make sure that other person doesn't tell you a damn thing, which is so frustrating, isn't it? I mean, it's maddening. That's why.
Well, have you had that thing where sort of, yeah, you're seeing a game and you're in an interview situation and then you've had someone sort of say, we're not talking about that yet. Or similarly, like, I want you to take that out.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. both had it.
Yeah, definitely.
Most times. Does that have an impact on the way you do things then, Laura?
Definitely. There is a real frustration about the way that sometimes you know things and either you find them interesting or sometimes you know that they're of interest or value to a consumer who's going to pick up the end product, and it's frustrating to basically feel like you're regurgitating the set line rather than telling people stuff that you think is important. I know, like, the big thing I did towards the one of the first things I did in 2016 with reporting was the PS4 Slim. I had that console in my hands before it was announced.
And you had one out of the box in your house, right?
I physically had one in my house, and I was like, this console has no optical audio output. That is a valuable thing for consumers to know. And no one, like, I have this box. Why can't I talk about it? Why is everyone afraid to? And I think that was the thing for me this year that got me into doing more of the investigative stuff, was it was annoying knowing this is a fact about a consumer product that a consumer should probably know and that there is value in them knowing. And for some reason we're not talking about. And yeah, that was just frustrating.
So were you sort of tentative then when you had that PS Slim to go public with what was and wasn't there? Because obviously, you know, we all know that, you know, we have good close relationships with people at major companies and publishers and whatnot. And that most of them know that, you know, we're not trying to screw anyone over and we never would. But at the same time, like you're saying, that's information that people should know. It's going to be public. In that case, it was like, what was it, a few weeks?
I think it was about 3 weeks before it came out, or like a week before it was announced.
Yeah, but it was in the summer, wasn't it? In the event
it was end of August. But that was one where I was definitely nervous about reporting on it, because slightly before me, Eurogamer had put up a video and said, oh yeah, we've seen one, it's real. And then they took it down, citing legal concerns.
That's right. They went to someone's house, didn't they?
Yeah, they went to someone's house and saw it. And it was frustrating to me that there was this moment of like, someone has stepped in and said, you can't talk about this thing, even though it clearly existed. And there was certainly an amount of concern about doing it. But eventually I just pushed through and was like, I have this thing. I know it exists. If I'm not talking about it, then what am I really more than a PR regurgitation at that point? And I think that was the first time I thought about that angle of, am I just regurgitating PR if I don't do this? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, because actually, I remember reading your piece, and was there, you had a paragraph, was it at the beginning or at the end, where it was sort of like, please don't sue me?
Yeah, the paragraph at the beginning that basically boiled down to, I believe that there is a journalistic and consumer interest angle on this. Please don't sue me. Please, like, I've said that it exists now. Please just don't take it down. Be good.
But like, it's that bizarre thing where you were absolutely right. Like, it was that sort of thing of like, if you had then received someone saying, okay, we want you to take this down, it's like, well, what right do you have? And so, and the angle which I suppose they could have taken would have been along the lines of, this console is being illegally obtained, and in doing so, you are benefiting from a criminal act. But I don't know. It didn't seem, and I can imagine that would have been the angle that might have been used against someone like Eurogamer or someone. But I don't know.
The concern I had on that front was that while I had been assured that it was the unit I'd obtained had come through a street date broken retailer as opposed to stolen stock, the problem is with UK stolen goods handling is that if you're accused of handling stolen goods, whether you knew you were doing so or not, you are at fault as the person handling those goods. And it was a big, messy legal situation of like that. It's why I made sure I no longer had the console before I posted my review, to just be like, okay, it's not in my possession. Please don't come sue me. I don't have it.
Does the person who moved it onto know its origins?
The person who moved it onto me told me the origin was that I don't know if I've talked much about this. Basically, a store in the United Arab Emirates had stock early to sell. They sold it to a brother who lived in the UK, and the brother in the UK sold it on in the UK. That is, as I understand it, the situation. So the retailer broke street date, but it wasn't stolen stock. It had been purchased from Sony, which I could not prove, but that was the narrative I worked with. It was a big messy situation, that one. But
yeah, and obviously, I mean, I was reading that at the time as well. I actually went to the event in New York and sat there thinking, yeah, I know all this. I wonder where I've seen this before. Did that kind of trigger something in you in a way where you're just like, hey, this is good? Like you said, this is not, I'm not going against the proverbial grain here. I'm doing something that's really useful. I'm not, you know, I'm not being an antagonist or anything, which I don't, because I don't see it at all, but you know.
Definitely. Like my thought there was that nothing I was doing was ruining the end experience for a consumer who buys that product. Like someone who buys a PS4 Slim isn't going to have a lesser experience because I talked about it earlier. And it might give them additional information with which to make purchases or not make purchases in that window leading up to release. And I think for me, that was the thing where I just started thinking, I want to do more reporting like this. I don't want to report anything that's going to, you know, I don't want to be saying, oh, I found out what the ending of this upcoming game is. This is what it's going to be. I don't want to ruin people's end experience. But that I found it fascinating this information was out there and just not being talked about in a lot of cases.
I mean, for you, Julian, have you, you know, because you'll go and you'll meet people, talk to people. I mean, when you know something that no one else has got, that information, does the news hound in you just lust to get it out there? I mean, how do you balance, the same applies to you, obviously, Laurie, how do you balance that having this nugget of knowledge that you feel is of significance in some way, but you also think that if you were to put it out there, it would piss that other person off. It would upset them if you put that out there.
What? Like, so what, the person who so if you've got leaks some information,
let's say you're in a studio and someone says, "Oh, you know, you can have a quick look at this, but don't tell anyone, naughty Julian." And so you've seen something, you're like, "I just saw a dev kit for it. I don't know, like you know, an NX dev kit or whatever. You know, which we're doing the rounds.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of us may have seen them, and that's where we went. That's not right. But you know, when you know that kind of stuff, like how. Do you have any kind of internal conflict as to what I should say and what I can't say?
It depends. I mean, so, for instance, there are stories I've been told by someone who says, you can't quote me on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, I won't quote them on it. But because I now know the story, although the person originally who told me that thing may not want that story to get out, and that's why they won't want to be quoted, I've not used them. And they've let me know that this thing exists, and I've then searched out the means to relate it, but I found enough other people willing to share the details of it besides them. I don't know. And like, there have been a couple of times where, and these aren't necessarily source like stories about leaks and that sort of thing, but I've had a couple of stories where someone's talked to me, I've written something and they've been very upset. But I just make sure that when I've published something, I feel like I've been fair by the person I'm right. quoting. Like, I'm not misconstruing what they said to get a better angle. Like, I am actually just relating what they told me. And it may be that sort of, I think there are a lot of people who, when they're interviewed, for instance, immediately aware of what it says. Like, sort of, they're having a nice conversation. And that's obviously disappointing that they didn't realize exactly what it was they were saying. But I'm still going to print it. I don't, like, and I imagine you've had similar situations where have you people come back to you after an interview and say, that's not what I said.
Yeah, it's always awkward when you have to do that moment of going back to someone and saying, well, you did say this, here's the recording, like, I'm not going to retract what I've published because it was accurate. But to your question, I guess, like, there is a difference between information said in confidence where the person has said, I don't want to be quoted on this, I'm showing you off the record, you know, I'm showing you just, you know, for your own interest, this is not something that I'm ready to get out, and that's one situation. And if that's a situation with an individual, I will usually, like, I will honor that. I will go in and say, okay, you've shown me under this context, that's fine. I won't report that you've said it. But again, at that point, you know, and you can start looking around for, are there other people who are willing to go on the record and be quoted on things? The people that I try not to think about is PR in that case. Like, I'm usually aware in those situations, PR don't want this getting out, but like often people will say to me online, like, why are you talking about this? You shouldn't have talked about this. This was under someone's NDA. It's like, yeah, but it wasn't my NDA. Yeah. If someone chose to break NDA to me and break a non-disclosure agreement, that's a risk they've chosen to put themselves under. And my job is not to concern myself with their having made that decision. It's to take that information and decide what to do with it from there, I guess.
I mean, because this sort of brings it back to leaks, but there is that thing of And I've certainly seen it in response to some of the leaks that you've been publishing. And then similarly, it's happened in the past with stuff that we've published where people will say, what are you doing? You're spoiling the marketing campaign for this game, or like you're revealing stuff which other people wouldn't want out. And sort of it comes back to that thing of, yes, it may be that they've got a big plan for this, but we're not an employee of theirs. We've not, certainly if I've ever signed an NDA, I'm not going to break it.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But I've not signed NDAs in these instances and so on. And there's no contractual reason for me not to. And people should recognize that I am a journalist. And so they have to be very aware of what they say around me.
Yeah. Like, I think the fundamental difference is PR's job is to tell people the version of events that paints them in the best light. Whereas our role is to get all the information out regardless of what light it places. And, you know, it's two different things. If we're not talking about the things that PR's not talking about, then we're not really doing a service to the job that we're supposed to be doing in the first place.
It's also the thing of, I'm trying to remember, there was an instance last year, I think it was, Stephen Totillo, who's the US editor of Kotaku, he published an article which was the price of games journalism or the cost of games journalism, but essentially it was about sort of how Kotaku's been under a blacklist from Bethesda for a very long time and Ubisoft at the time as well. I've spoken to people who knew those companies' side of things, and they were saying sort of along the lines like, yes, it's frustrating when a publication reveals this information that they'd want to keep secret, but actually the job at that point for the company is to suddenly find who was leaking. It's not to go after the press who published it. It's to there is someone within the company who is definitely breaking a contract by giving that information out. And so it's not sort of the press who should be targeted.
The people who are leaking that information to the press are the people that have done something wrong to the company, as opposed to the people who then report that on, who weren't under any obligation legally not to talk about it.
Yeah.
It is frustrating when the response is to punish the journalists who reported on that information rather than the people who broke specific contracts they were under.
Mm.
But I'm aware of it being a cost. I'm amazed that Sony never came knocking down my door. I was very much expecting that with the PS4 Slim stuff. But certain companies seem to be definitely better than others about responding to people who've leaked information and still working with them.
It's also similarly, like, even if... Bethesda have had a blacklist on Kotaku since... I think it must be like 2014, back when sort of information about Prey 2 and some emails from the company were leaked. And since then, their PRs just won't talk to us. So we can't get hold of review code. We can't go to events to see the games ahead of time. But that's never stopped us reporting on them. Like, it's sort of, we'll still find ways to talk to their developers, but also we'll still cover their games fairly. I mean, Patricia Hernandez was doing incredible work on Fallout. Ever since Fallout 4 got released, she's been frequently posting features on it, going deep into the community and finding ways to talk about that game in an interesting way. And sort of that theory of, even if we do get blacklisted as a cost of doing that style of reporting, we'll still cover those games fairly as much as we can. And I'm sure this is exactly the same. Like, if Nintendo turned around and blacklisted you, I don't know if this is something which has happened.
I've not been told it officially, but I've had people off the record tell me that it's a thing already. So,
but when the Switch comes out, you're still going to be... covering it
I'll
as
still pick
much
it up.
As you
I'll
would
still
the PlayStation.
Review the games. I won't be any harsher on them because of that. But, that's it's their prerogative if that's the response they want to have to me leaking stuff. But I'll still keep doing my job. I just might not have a review up day one, obviously.
I suppose as well. I mean, I don't think there's all that much to be gained some of the time, apart from, getting your clicks in place from having those day ones anymore, really. I don't know anyone else. I like to see a group of them together, and especially if people tend to follow your sites anyway for what they offer and what they say. Like you're saying, like, even if Kotaku is quote unquote blacklisted, which I find hilarious anyway, like, oh well, we're bigger boys than you and we're gonna play this game our way and you can't play with us anymore, seems a little bit sort of pathetic to me anyway, but not that I'm down on Bethesda, they're lovely, but never had a problem with them myself, but probably do now. You mentioned leaks and all that, obviously, and the reception to it, and like, you're spoiling it for us. That that really surprises me whenever I see that come out. Like, how, like, do you just kind of laugh in the face of that and go, you idiots, like, we're giving you this information. You don't, you know, we're genuinely not, this isn't us telling you, you know, we're not giving you a Christmas presents like on Christmas Eve or anything. Like, we're giving you information that you can make proper decisions based on. And, you know, let's be honest, the internet's a pretty big place. Like, if you don't want to see this shit, it's really easy to avoid it.
I've said this before to people who follow me on Twitter and complain about me leaking Switch information. And I say, well, don't follow me then, or, you know, set up a block so that you don't see my tweets if they have the word Switch in them. Like, there are ways to avoid my leaks if you aren't interested. Or if you see something that starts with leak, rumor, report, and then a headline, just don't read further than that, perhaps, if you don't want to know.
It's one of those things where, because as a result, yeah, going back to that sort of post by Stephen Tatio, and the comments were along the lines of people saying, yeah, why are you supporting this marketing campaign, that sort of thing. And it was a strange reaction, and one I wasn't expecting. And at the same time, so we are a website that is happy to leak. I mean, it's not happy to leak in the wrong word. We will do investigations, we will talk to anonymous sources, and
it all checks out.
Yeah, then, and we don't really mind sticking to, we won't really protect a game company for just the sake of keeping its marketing campaign rolling. And like, so if, for instance, we find out a game exists and we can verify this game exists, we're not going to wait until the street date of its announcement that we're going to announce it. And Kotaku readers know that. Like, they know that that's what they'll get if they come to Kotaku. And I think it's one of these things where not all video games websites are the same. They've got very different interests and flavors. And for instance, on the Kotaku UK side, we don't really do reviews because the US will do a large proportion of the game reviews. But similarly, it's just sort of not something we're massively interested in doing as a review for day one. We'll cover a game after it's come out, that sort of thing. So people know not to come to us massively for reviews if that's what they're interested in. They go to Eurogamer, they go to PC Gamer, all these other websites who do them. Similarly, if you are wanting investigative stuff, then you do come to us. And similarly, you go to Let's Play Video Games, you go to places where they've proven in the past that's what they do. And it's sort of, I think, just the real diehard readers of websites recognize, are there because of those things, but also they recognize what they can expect to find when they're reading articles. But also what you were saying is, if you've got a headline which is so-and-so, such-and-such reveals, that's what the article is going to be about. Like, if it's going to be about Switch details, like, all the specs of the Switch have been revealed, that's what's going to be in the article. And I don't know, just don't read it.
Like, I know there have been times where, like, you know, either be it in video games or movies or whatever piece of media, that something's come out and I'm not going to be able to see it or experience it straight away. And I've gone, okay, I will avoid the places where that's probably going to get covered so that I can go in fresh. And if you want to go in fresh on something, it's relatively easy to avoid that information. I've done it myself, and it amazes me how many people apparently find it difficult to do.
Is it the lure? You know, it's just like, I know I shouldn't look, but I'm going to look in a minute. Because I fall for that sometimes. You know, oh, I can't watch Westworld yet, because if I watch it now, my wife won't. We'll have to watch it tomorrow with the wife. But I might just have a look and see what happened. Oh, no! I'm going to ruin it.
But then do you comment or tweet at the writer and saying, why did you write that spoiler-filled post, which I just had to read?
I just feel a dick myself for ruining it for myself.
Yeah, that's the response.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's sort of like, there's, what was this? The whole of the next series of Game of Thrones has had its scripts leaked. This happened before Christmas, didn't it? Like, a couple of months ago. And I've managed to, as soon as I say this, I'm now going to get this tweeted at me. I've managed to avoid everything that's being revealed in those scripts. Yeah. I didn't even realize it had happened for a month after it had done. Like, it's also, if you don't want to read and find out certain things, you just don't go to the places where those things are going to be discussed. Kotaku is probably one of those places where, gaming-wise, if there is information that's been revealed about a game through a code release or a hack or something like that, you're probably going to find it on Kotaku.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. Like, I think if you have, as an outlet, a reputation for doing things like leaks, people should probably be aware of that and avoid you if that's a thing they don't want to experience. And I don't begrudge anyone who doesn't come to Let's Play Video Games because they might see leaks about the Switch. That's, you know, if you don't want to see that, then that's cool. That's not a problem. But
Switch leaks, cake stuffed vaginas. Oh. I mean, it's all been going off on your site lately.
We have had a very weird year for content to Let's Play Video Games.
But what, I mean, do you have a kind of internal, I guess, barometers that might be the right word, you know, kind of like a way of measuring, like, no, like that's too much, or that's like, you know, that would be stepping over a mark, and you know, because I mean, you know, blacklisting is one thing, but you really, I mean, you don't want to totally spoil the relationship with Nintendo. You know, they're nice people, there's systems you like, there's games you like, it's nice to be for them to, like, you know, whoever they are, you know, hello Mr. Miyamoto, how you doing, you know, to not be completely kicked to the side and,
yeah,
you know, well, be the renegade.
I think for me, I have two barometers that I use. One of them is, would, if I wasn't in games press and I read this, would it affect my enjoyment of the end product? And the one that's a bit more nebulous is, if I wasn't in games press and I was just following this console, would I be interested in this news? Would this get me discussing things with my friends? Would this get me going like, ooh, I wonder if that means, and having those conversations? I think if it's a leak that just is, oh, that's the case, and you've got nothing else to say about it afterwards, it sometimes doesn't feel like it's of interest enough to run. But generally for me, it's just anything I publish, I don't want it to ruin the end experience. If someone accidentally sees this post, is it going to lessen their enjoyment or lessen their ability to go in blind on a final product on the day they go and buy it? And as long as I'm not ruining that experience, then for me, I feel like I'm in the position I want to be.
So is there anything you've heard about the Switch, which you've been able to verify, that you've then chosen not to share?
There is a decent amount of information that I've got double sourced that I've not spoken about. Some of it is because it falls into that previous category of, that's information about a game that will probably lessen that moment for you when you play it. Some of it just because I have honestly become exhausted in the last couple of months. And, you know, I'm at a point now where I'll leave some stuff to be surprises. I'm not going to stick my neck out to publish more, but there is definitely things that I've heard and not reported.
You're sitting on an F-Zero, aren't you?
I wish I was. I'll tell you, I'm not sat on an F-Zero. I wish I was sat on F-Zero.
Nintendo themselves said, didn't they, something along the lines of, what more could we do with that? Like, why do you want it back? What more could it be other than more F-Zero? That's fine.
That's what we want.
Yeah. Does anyone want more than that?
Like, you brought back Star Fox. I mean, you know.
Give us more F-Zero. Make it shiny. Let me have it on the go and still be quite shiny, and I'll probably be very happy.
I'd be into that, yeah. I mean, even though, you know, knowing all you have, or, you know, all the sources you've had around the Switch, you know, you yourself are still enthused and you want to have this machine in your house. Yeah. And this is the thing.
Yeah. I've seen so much information about what's going to happen at the reveal event next week. And there's stuff that I've not talked about. I'm still excited to watch that reveal, because even if I know the bullet points, I still haven't seen that presentation. I'm still going to go into that waiting to see, ooh, how are they going to put that all together? Is it going to be paced well? What's the reaction going to be to various things they talk about? I'm still excited for that presentation, regardless of knowing the bullet points of what's going to happen. And I find it interesting how many people, knowing those bullet points, suddenly lose interest in watching how it all comes together, I guess.
Well, I suppose that maybe that's the people who seem to be upset that we were spoiling the reveals of, like, when people have said, when you're leaking information, you're spoiling the reveal of this. I suppose that's the relationship they have with game releases that, I mean, you don't have and I don't have. It's that sort of thing. Like, I'm not that excited for trailer drops and that sort of thing. I would just happily have the information available and then write about it. Because the game is the thing which is, at the end of the day, interesting.
Exactly. Like, it is... To me, it's more interesting to find out that, say, there's a Mario Rabbids RPG happening and to discuss for a while, like, oh, that's a thing? Okay, well, you know, why do we think this came about? What does that tell us about Nintendo and Nintendo's ongoing relationship of sharing their properties with other developers? What does that suggest about, like, their how they're trying to produce content with their big characters in time for a launch push? There are interesting conversations around that, and I would rather talk about the fact, hey, this thing exists. Let's talk about what that maybe means for Nintendo, what that maybe says going forward for them as a company. I would rather have those conversations than be discussing that was a trailer. What minute details did we see in the trailer? What can we guess at now that we've seen the trailer? It's like, no, there's interesting discussions to have that might be skimmed over, you know, by not talking about it when, you know, it's in a vacuum, I guess.
Cool. And I mean, regards post, and you've obviously held some stuff back. Have either of you run stuff before where you've hit publish and you've gone, shit, I shouldn't have done that?
I did with one this year, and it's one that within 24 hours we had issued a retraction and been like, yeah, ignore that we posted. Like, we didn't take it down, but we were like, yeah, disregard the information in this. I think this was end of August. There was one Switch leak that I published and then very quickly took down. I say 24 hours, it was much quicker than that. Basically because we failed to source as well as we should have done and very quickly realized, oh, here is a hole in how we reported on this that we really should have done better, and were quickly transparent about the way we reported on it and where we fell into the issue. And like, we didn't take it down. We were like, yeah, you know, we'll own this. This is an issue we've done that we will avoid in future. But I think that's the only example I've got, is one where I was too... I didn't do some of the checks on a source that I now would do. And I know for myself, I have no formal training in doing journalism. I've entirely self-taught myself in games writing. I failed my GCSE English exams. And I don't know, for me, it's been a learning experience. I just try and be transparent when something like that happens and talk about, okay, this is the failing that happened here. This is how and why it occurred. This is what I'm doing to avoid it in future. Just trying to be transparent about that stuff, I suppose.
Nope.
You're just a perfect journalist.
Especially regarding leaks and the stories which have come from anonymous sources or sources who... Yeah, essentially, stories which have come from sources which aren't the official line of information. I'm pretty happy with how those have come out. But, I mean, there have certainly been stories when I've regretted having posted them in the sense of it's been a failing on my part in the sense of the amount of... that I missed a piece of information or that I... made a thing which would, if I'd done a fact check, wouldn't have got through.
Mm.
But that's a failure of myself as opposed to those stories when it's getting it. Because normally it's one of those things where if I'm getting information from someone which isn't the official line, I want to be really, really sure that's a solid story when it goes out. And this is exactly what you've been saying. Like, sort of, you want to be really, really careful about those sorts of things because you want to be right. You don't want to have to issue a retraction.
No, because if you do that, it's no one wants to have that blemish on their record that says, like, this time you weren't right, or this time you didn't do this correctly. Therefore, you know, that takes away some credibility ongoing. And that's not something that anyone who's trying to do this long term as a career ever wants to have to do.
So I'm trying to think of like examples of stories of that, but like, I'm sure there are some. I'm sure there'll be something which, if I was looking back over my history, but as well, this is a terrible memory.
Ever come back and bit you in the ass, so to speak? Like, you mentioned earlier on, you know, getting blacklisted is cool. I mean, not you personally, but the site itself. I mean, that to me always seems like a massive stretch. Like, I think it's quite petty on the part of publishers, but like, do you think that the lines that a journalist has to go over are quite minor before some of the bigger publishers start throwing their toys out of the pram? I don't know. I mean, if that information's there and like you say, you've got it and it's valuable, then like, I don't see what the problem is.
It depends who it is. And sometimes publisher and developer responses, I think, are a little bit silly. My favorite example of a developer response to a leak I did was back in, this must be 2015. Back when I was writing at Destructoid, I leaked the existence of Until Dawn Rush of Blood about a week before Paris Games Week. And the day that I posted that leak, Supermassive did a Reddit AMA that same day, and they denied the existence of any DLC in development for Until Dawn. And they were like, nope, that don't believe that report. It's not a thing. It's not real. And for a week, all that existed was I'd posted this leak. The developer had said it's not real. So everyone said, okay, guess it wasn't real. And then a week later, it gets revealed. I'm like, I told you, you could have just said nothing about
so,
my
so
leak.
So is that
you didn't...
feeling one of like smug vindication or just like really pissed off because like you had a week of people obviously going, haha, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Exactly. It's both. It's during that week, it is sheer frustration at, I know this thing exists. Why is it being denied? For this week, I will be that person that made up a story about Until Dawn Rush of Blood existing. And then a week later, it's like, yes, I have that vindication, but I'm still annoyed you put me through that week. Which, it can be a frustrating situation.
Well, in the one which I remember, because this isn't something, a situation I've been in myself, but I've seen it happen to other people. I mean, for instance, like Jason Schreier announcing that No Man's Sky was going to be delayed.
Oh.
And all the fun and games that came with that, bloody
no
hell.
No word from either PlayStation or Hello Games to confirm or deny this. I don't think either of them ever denied it. They just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the No Man's Sky subreddit tossed and turned that idea around and decided the best thing is to start issuing death threats to Jason over this. But then also Keza, who was editor of Kotaku UK at the time, was she was getting death threats just by having said, this is right. I've heard this from my own sources. This is right. And just supporting Jason. Mm. I just sort of that thing of like, a spillover of death threats. And like, I completely understand why, from a developer point of view, if they've got a set date in mind where they're going to reveal information and a journalist gets hold of that information beforehand and then reveals that information, they're not really going to step out of their way to defend that journalist who's suddenly receiving death threats or just kickback from their community. Because it's sort of, well, I mean, in the same way that we're not beholden to sharing their information, they're not beholden to protecting us at all. But at the same time, it's like, if that information is out there, it's correct. You'd almost, I don't, because I've not worked in PR for a very long time, I can't really think if it would be a good move on the developer side to confirm or deny that information.
Yeah, it is a weird situation. Like, I know with the PS4 Slim thing, there was at least a week between me putting my review and unboxing up and the announcement being official. And everyone during that week knew this was a thing. But that didn't stop me having a week of receiving death threats, rape threats, and goodness knows what else. And the best I can understand why that happened, I think, was because what I was saying about the console suggested it was less powerful on a raw power perspective than the Xbox One S. It didn't do some of the things that the One S did. And people who like Sony very much didn't want to admit that that was the case. Therefore, clearly I'm lying, and therefore retaliation should be swift and just, because how dare you suggest that Sony won't be the most powerful of the two upgraded boxes. And it is a weird position where I agree with you. Like, Sony had no obligation to, you know, say anything. But it's irritating when it's like, here's pictures, here's videos, here's my write-up. This falls in line with what other places have said, and I've very clearly shown people it exists, and they just stayed silent for a week, which is weird and frustrating. Like, it annoyed me to think that, like, Sony somewhere were like, yeah, like, nearly a million people have seen this unboxing, but if we don't talk about it, no one will know.
Yeah. I can understand the frustration. It's just sort of, yeah, and it's like, I think that's just, it's an element that can happen as a result of these sorts of stories. I've not been in a situation where I've revealed something like that and I've had a kickback from it, though. So that's the sort of, I'm very happily saying it from the other side. So he's like, yeah, well, you know, you brought it on yourself. Because that's not a response anyone should have on anything for publishing anything, especially when it's a
horrible internet default, isn't it? Yeah. To, you know, you put some exclusive information out there that you know is going to upset a few people, and that will translate as, we're going to come to your house and skull fuck you, or some such twist on it. It's a faintly pretty horrendous kind of thing. I mean, you mentioned Keza there. I know she's had it really hard before, and yourself. I mean, it's, I don't know. Maybe we'll get over it at some point, but I don't know. Maybe.
I wouldn't count on it being anytime soon.
No,
the internet.
No, sadly not. Sadly not. Sorry, if anyone's heard me coughing and sputtering, I do apologise. Also, just briefly, if it sounds like we're backstage at a festival occasion, I don't know what Viceland have been doing for the last few hours, but they've been quite loud. Julian, I just want to pick up on the Star Citizen piece that you wrote last year, because that was very, very thorough, very investigative. Lots and lots of 7 pieces, right? 7
Five pieces. Follow-ups and stuff as well.
On this massive, strange, probably never going to come out properly game, you know, hours and hours of research into that. Why'd you do it? Because we know how this turns over. Like, you'll do all this amazing work, right? Because we've all done this. Loads of amazing work. You're so proud of a piece. Then something completely trivial goes up the next day and like the hits are off the charts for it. Like, here is a funny kitten video game thing. Boom.
No, I know exactly which story did better. But you know, it's not done better yet. And that has... So Sarsison was... I'm really, really proud both with how that came out and the response to it as well was wonderful. But also it did traffic extremely well, which was nice to see, because it's so frustrating when you spend a huge amount of time on a piece and then no one reads it. That did really quite well. But for a
Before any nasty internet people will say, no one read it. But it's still thousands. No one still means thousands of people. But, you know, it's just like, you know.
But it's not sort of the hundreds of thousands you're wanting.
Oh, no,
but
only 20,000 people really enjoyed this thing I wrote. Oh, no.
Exactly. It's just nothing. That would be something that would be quite nice. But, so the story, which for a week I was terrified it would always traffic more, not in the sense of like, I wrote both pieces, so it was quite nice to get two very high traffic pieces, but it was a don't share Watch Dogs 2's vaginas. it was basically just sort of a character model in Watch Dogs 2 which had a textured vagina on the model, which you could sometimes see if the woman was shot and then fell in a way that you could look up her skirt. And I put that up on the website and that just did silly numbers. And it was just sort of rushing up to Star Citizen investigation. I was like, I don't want that to get beaten in a week by this. But it said that's done fine. No, it was... Star Citizen was fantastic. It was... I spent about 7 months... researching that. I started in February last year. We'd had this idea that we wanted to see what we could do if we went in depth on a game project that was particularly exciting and had a huge amount of meat to it. And like, Star Citizen is one where there is obviously controversy in the sense that people talk about, will it come out, won't it come out? Then there's also the whole like spin-off of people like, what's happening money-wise with that game? Like, sort of, is it a money hole where all this, because it's raised $140 million, like, is that money just going and it's just disappearing and not being spent well and that sort of thing? And people can form their opinions outside of the project, but actually what was going on, we want to know more about it. But then similarly as well, like, sort of the game... if you take just the game on its own, it's a fascinating game. Like, it's sort of, they're trying something so ambitious and I wanted to know more about it. And so, spent 7 months of talking to developers anonymously. And then, because we talked quite a lot about responses to things, responses to when a story goes up from developers and publishers. Cloud Imperium Games were brilliant when they found out, and basically they had heard that I was contacting developers because I contacted a lot of people, some of them had then contacted Cloud Imperium Games, say this journalist has been in touch with me. They couldn't say a great deal about what I wanted to know because I was only people weren't going on to talk to Cloud Imperium Games that they're being contacted after I'd spoken to them, because they wouldn't necessarily want to have that relationship. So Cloud Imperium Games knew this, that there was a story in the works, and their response wasn't no comment. That was come up and visit us, sit down with Chris Roberts, who's their CEO. I spent good 4 hours with him, just interviewing him on his own. And then for the next week, I spent having Skype interviews with loads of their directors. They gave a huge amount of time as a response to finding out I was writing this story. And it didn't change the story in the sense of a lot of the facts I had were still the same, but I suddenly had different sides of that, of those events. So for instance, and if you've read the article, you'll see that I'm not really in it very much. It's largely this developer said this, and then Cloud Imperium said this, and going back and forth over the same points and showing both sides of the argument. And that only came about because Cloud Imperium Games, when I contacted them, picked up the phone and answered. That is brilliant to do.
And you found that sort of level of openness quite refreshing then.
Yes.
Because like we said at the start of this, you know, the games media generally can be, the publishing side of it, the publisher side of it, when they give you access to developers, can be quite guarded, quite kind of like, you know, you're going to have effectively security there with you and make sure you don't cross a line. So that must be nice, you know, to sit with Chris and just be like, get him. Presumably he was just willing to talk about near enough anything.
Yeah, well, so basically, yeah, completely everything. So basically I sat down with him and I brought along sort of a 10,000 word printout of transcripts, which was basically all the quotes I had on before I got talking to anyone at Glad Imperium. And then just went through pretty much everything. And it was sort of question by question asking him. It's like sort of, take me back to the beginning of the game's development. Let's walk through it. You did this, you made this decision. Why do you do that? I've been told that this is what was going on at the time. Is this true? And then sort of, and they weren't denying things. It was just sort of, it would be saying why it was they did the thing. And so I might have spoken to a developer who had one perspective on it, who, and like I'd have verified with other developers before going to Clan Imperium that this thing had happened, but I still only had these sort of perspectives on it which weren't all encompassing. And suddenly I had this sort of and Roberts being the CEO suddenly has this sort of top-down view on what's been told to all these different directors and to ground level staff, and I had lots of information from ground level staff and mid-level staff who were looking up. And so I suddenly got this sort of much fuller account of everything that happened. And it was that moment where it's like I remember coming out of that interview and just thinking none of what's been said doesn't fit with everything I'd heard previously. So it was sort of that thing, you get that sort of sense of wholeness about a story where it's like, oh, right, this is actually what happened, because everything I've been told from all these different sources all fits together.
And do you think that, you know, we're often told that our positions are redundant. You know, no one needs games media, no one needs the games press anymore. But what you've done there is put together this story with all these different, you know, parts, all these different characters, and comprise the coherent whole at the end of it. And that's because you've had the time to do it and been afforded that time. And I guess, you know, Kotaku has said to you, Julian, however much space you need, well, you know, you have to do your job as well, but yeah. you know all this news needs doing, but you know, they're willing to say, you know, to let you do that. And obviously Cloud Imperium are very accepting of it. I mean, do you think because of the way that a lot of the games press does work, which is very news cycle oriented, it's very, like you said, like get that review up day one, or like here's a new video drop, we're going to cover that, blah blah, you know, a lot of the sites you go to have the same thing. Do you think if more sites broke out of that, like we wouldn't hear so much like, oh well, why do you exist, because there'd be more pieces like your piece, you know?
So there's quite a lot to that. So let's see, the way that Kotaku UK runs is we're a subsidiary of Kotaku US, and it's just two of us who do it, our editor and me in the news editor role. And when we were doing Star Citizen, I didn't have any time during the day for the most part to work on it. It was essentially lots and lots of late nights, weekends gone. I mean, like, happy to do it because it was also, I was really interested in the story, but it was essentially making time to make this thing possible. And then also sort of the last 2 months of it, when it came to sort of pulling everything together, there was, we started hiring, we had a news cover come in to basically work during the day shift so I could be working on this article. And I mean, we can look at our traffic for those months, and we did have a significant dip because we essentially had me, just half of the team, not doing any work that was visible on the website. It was a big cost for us. And like, we took hits on that side. We also, like, financial costs, like the amount of we spent on sort of transcription and news cover made this a very expensive thing to do. We're very proud of it and we're happy we've done it. And I'm looking forward to doing those sorts of things again. And we've got projects in mind and that sort of thing. But I can absolutely see why other websites can't do this, especially it's like, there are so many websites which are two people teams, three, four people teams. And the idea of one of them be one of, like, a quarter of that team or a third or half of that team being just working on something else entirely for months at a time, it's not feasible. It's really, really hard to make it happen. And like, it would be brilliant to see it happen. And we, and like, I wouldn't want to dismiss Games Workshop by saying that we're all publishing the same thing, because it's incredible the amount of unique features, fascinating features, where people have spent time with interesting developers or communities and got stories which no one else has. That happens all the time. Like every week on every website, you're starting on all the good websites, you're starting to see these sorts of features appear. I mean, no one else is a Cake Vagina website, Cake Vagina article, like sort of.
Just cakes, I should point out.
One of them was Gruntilda's face between her legs.
Yeah. All number of things. But like that sort of, that took someone's time to do that. And like it's sort of, and everyone else has to pull up the slack while that sort of thing is happening. And I need to, I don't know, I don't see a solution to fixing this problem except for having much larger teams. I mean, like you look at his website, Eurogamer. Eurogamer are fantastic. They do brilliant, brilliant coverage. And part of the reason they so consistently are the ones putting up huge features. They do some excellent news journalism, but also like features work and review work and so on. It's because they've got a large team. I mean, there's what, 10 people, 13 people?
Yeah, something.
And it's sort of like a, and I don't know, that's a luxury that a lot of people don't have. And so, yeah, the more staff you had and the more money that was in it, we would see more of these sorts of things. I'd love to see more of it, but it's just sort of, it's a lot of work to make it happen. And you have to keep the website ticking over while you're doing those other things. You can't have a website that's not covering the stories that need to be, which everyone has, but it's also your website needs to have everyday coverage that people come to.
I mean, do you know when, you know, you are just receiving press releases like we all do, you know, that we all, you know, so-and-so, new game out, April, whatever. Do you know from them what's immediately Kotaku, what's immediately Let's Play Video Games, and we should put our little spin on that and put something on it? And, you know, you already have a flavour for what your readers want. Like, you know, what games suit Kotaku, what games just, you know, you wouldn't get anything from.
Well, I think the Let's Play Video Games, we have the luxury of, we're a three-person team, but we are Patreon-funded, which puts us in the really nice position of, we know that if we're not covering a press release that's gone out, that the people who are following us and who are supporting us will likely see it elsewhere and they'll still get that news. And it somewhat affords us the ability to cover the things that we find interesting and be confident that that interest that the writer has on that story will transfer over into making it an interesting thing for the reader to read through. And I think there's definitely a sense of, when you've got a small team like the team we've got, knowing this person on the team has an interest in these kind of stories, this person has an interest in these kind of stories. And as long as the people on the team are working on the things that they find interesting, it keeps a consistency of output where people know, oh, if I come to Let's Play Video Games, I'm going to see, be it news or features, about the things that these three writers, the areas of interest these three writers have. And it's a nice flexible position to be in, where we can say, these are the things our writers are interested in. If you're interested in those things too, you will see news, features, reviews on those areas from those kind of angles. It's not a position every outlet can be in, because obviously if you're making revenue off of advertisement, you have to know what's going to get clicks from the audience and what's going to maximize that. And that has to be a consideration, which is not a criticism on any outlet that runs that way. It's just a reality, I suppose, of if you need people to click on things in order to get the money rolling over.
Watchdog's vaginas.
Yeah, you're right about Watchdog's vaginas.
I mean, even if I had Patreon money, I'd still be writing about
still
that. I mean,
that's sort of, it's like that. I guess the difference would be like, had I still been back at Destructoid where I used to be, I'd have done the sort of thing that like you did, where it's like, hey, here's the thing about the vaginas in that game. Whereas once I saw how that was trafficking with just like coverage of the vaginas in Watchdog's 2, I could be like, okay, I think it would be really funny to abstract out the, like, do abstractions of form of vaginas and be like, hey, vaginas in video games shouldn't be such a taboo topic. Let's make a bunch of silly vagina art. And I could put like, I think I put 4 days into putting that together, and I could just be like, yeah, that's totally a use of time, because if I find it funny, probably the people supporting the site will. So I don't know. It's nice to have that flexibility.
It's interesting. One of the few criticisms we've had at Waypoint since the launch in October.
Too few vaginas?
Was it too few vaginas? Hasn't come up yet, but I'll take that to the top brass right now. No names on the homepage. They haven't been there. And it's a bit like what you're saying, you know, people like to kind of, like I did when I was reading like music mags or whatever as a kid, you know, you'd want to read that journalist that you like, that critic that you like. And I think obviously that's in the big pile of things we're looking at. And you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, guys. Gosh. But, you know, personality is really important. And like you say, people will fund you. People want to read your stuff. People come to Kotaku and say, no, you're there. They're like, I mean, you know, the British Kotaku is quite different tonally from the American Kotaku a lot of times. You know, it's very British, which I like, you know, as the sole Brit of the otherwise exclusively US team. You know, I don't often get the British logo. Every now and again, I put a little British joke reference in there, and I'm sure someone doesn't get it, but leaves it there anyway. Just otherwise, I'll get upset. I thought I'd just ask a few questions we had from readers, tweeters, before we close out. Obviously, some are going to be to do with the Switch, but I wanted to ask you this, Julian, because it makes no sense to me. But someone who has the you might have seen it anyway. Someone who has the Twitter username Buffalo Custard Bath, that ring a bell to you?
No, that's new.
Okay. They ask, why is Reykjavik dangerous for journalists? That's a question that seems to have meaning.
Yeah.
Like, we've been in Reykjavik together, haven't we, you and I?
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
I don't remember it getting that dangerous.
I'm loving watching the two confused faces here, no, trying to puzzle out.
Well,
the
I don't know. I think what it might be. I mean, like, so CCP every year do eFanFest, and that's when we were last. Well,
I was there last year.
So I've been to that a couple of times, and every time there, it happened much more the first time. But there's a lot of alcohol involved on the pub crawl of
Never
FanFest.
Try and keep up with the locals.
No, the developers just no. I mean, there's the thing called the Brennigan, not Brennigan. That's
it's the Futurama.
But yeah. It's called, which means what? Black Death, which you know, if ever you want to, your spirit, you should name it after a plague. It seems to be quite brutal to journalists because I think that pub crawl has knocked out a fair few. I know I've lost a dictaphone on that pub crawl because I was commentating some arm wrestling and I got knocked out of my hand. There was a point where like it wasn't so no journalists were involved with this as far as I know, but there was a fight that broke out between a couple of years ago they used to give the different teams on the pub crawl a flag. And there was a game where it's like, if you can get another team's flag, then you win like a bottle of Black Death at the other end of it. And so like, I just remember like vaguely coming out to a pub about six pubs deep or so. And seeing this team of screaming Eve players running down the road after another team of Eve players trying to get their flag. And like, apparently at one point this broke out into a massive fight, but I don't really remember any of that. So I don't know if any journalists got caught up in that and that's what brought them low. That could be it.
Have you ever been in a fight in Reykjavik, Laura, that we should
know about? I've never been in a fight in Reykjavik, but I feel like I'm missing out by having not been now. I feel like this is some kind of journalist experience that
it's a trial by fire.
there's always next year, but it's this year. It's January, so.
Oh, gosh,
I haven't quite ticked over in the 2017.
Just 4 months to go.
Twitter, well, again through Twitter, someone called Joe Crook asks, what indie games would you like to see on Switch? Now, I'm going to say that's presumably recent or imminent ones. We all know that Rhyme's coming out for it, which I'm quite happy about. I remember Rhyme getting a cover of Edge years ago now, and I was thinking that's going the way of the Edge cover curse. There's been a fair few of those over the years, but I don't know, like Switch comes out, obviously it's got Mario, obviously it's got Zelda and various other things. I mean, you know, what cool indie games would you like to see in there? Because Nintendo has a really strange relationship with indies. It has some great ones on there, like, you know, Shovel Knight and stuff, but then...
Yeah, the first thing that came to mind to me is stuff like your Binding of Isaacs, where it's you can sit and play through a round very, very quickly on the go. You can, you know, stop between floors or something. There's convenient places to stop as you complete rooms, but that it's still an experience that if you put up on the TV, holds up and works that way. Like, can either do that very long playthrough on your couch, or you can be like, I completed this one single room, now I'll turn the screen off and get off the tube or whatever. And yeah, I think that's generally the big thing that's going to be important for indies on the Switch. It's a really nice looking device. I'd like to be able to take more indie games on the go.
Well, so the thing which the Switch has, which I really want to see indies take on board, is the thing, because you can do multiple controllers.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to see Tricky Towers on a Switch. Like, yes. Just the idea that I could be on the bus with a friend and we could just snap off the controllers and each be playing Tetris on the back. I'd happily spend... Oh, Car Journeys would just dissolve with that sort of thing going on.
The car headrest jack in the opening thing. I think that's such a good idea of just get a bunch of really fun, silly multiplayer games that you can play with just an analog stick and four buttons.
Oh, similarly, I've not actually had a chance to play it yet, but I went out and bought a copy as soon as I saw it existed. Have you ever played Mashed before? Mm-hmm. It was back on the PS2. Like, it was essentially those Micro Machines style races where you're all sharing one screen. There's like four, you can have four, I think you could have eight player on Mashed. But like, you can pick up like sort of machine guns or barrel bombs, that sort of thing. It was just this manic racer destroying other people's cars or knocking them off the screen. Blaze Rush is one of the PS Plus games this month, and it's the same sort of thing, but it's only on PS3 in the PS Plus, but I went out and bought it on PS4 because like, it saw the video for it, and this thing looks amazing. I'd want to see that sort of thing on the Switch.
I would love to see, and it's one that I've previously taken like a PS4 somewhere to run, is the Jackbox games. They're sort of the party game collections where you all use your phones to play, because it's really convenient to have a small, easily propped up screen that you can take somewhere and then be like, right, it's about large enough for everyone to see. Here's your party game to sit around. Mm. So that's one that, like, if like your Jackbox collections were on Switch, I would be taking that to a lot of parties probably.
Yeah.
Cause I'll be that person in the Switch trailer that turns up to a party and says,
right,
I don't want to have a conversation. Let's play my video
that's
game.
That's better than showing up with Mario.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, well, you can come play this with me.
At least show up with a game where people can type in like funny words about boobs on their phone. Absolutely. And everyone can have a giggle.
Always a winner.
Yeah.
There are no boobs in the Mushroom Kingdom.
But actually, sorry, if we're not talking about just multiplayer games, like, and this is more of like a speculative, what I would love to see is SteamWorld Dig and SteamWorld Heist are two of the best games that have been
both
on Nintendo.
Nintendo, aren't they?
Like, whatever they make next, I'm just excited to see what they announce next, and hopefully there's going to be something on the Switch, because that'd just be awesome.
I mean, I guess indie support will go a long way towards sort of cementing the Switch with people like ourselves, I suppose. You know, I love my Wii U, I totally do, but it is the Mario, the Yoshi, the Kirby system. You know, I don't really have that many indie games on it. So to see that, some of that support would be good, be amazing. You know, whenever there was one for the Wii U, I think, how was it, Jotun came out on it recently, the Viking-y one. And I was like, yeah, I'll download that on the Wii U because it's a novelty, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Like when I think Tengami was one that came out, that I played through that on the Wii U because I was like, yeah, it's a thing that I wanted to play anyway, and it's on a Nintendo system. I'll play, give me an excuse to play my console.
There you go, dust it off. A Twitter user called Phantom Door asked you, Laura, about the we mentioned this before we came on the podcast, about movie reports and whether when you read, you know, in the media about, you know, reports on a forthcoming movie, usually they're from the set, they're like leaks from a set or something, which we just accept, you know, that's how that kind of news works. But with games, obviously, you get this big, quite a big retaliation from leaks sometimes. We've kind of touched upon it a bit, you know, well, not just a bit, you know, you've had all kinds of nonsense thrown your way for just saying, look, here is where it plugs into the wall or something. Yeah. How dare you spoil this for us? I mean, do you know, he is saying, so what do you think the difference is there? Is it a cultural thing, or is it a generational thing? Is it just the audience?
It's interesting. I think there's just a difference in expectation. In movies, the main things that can leak are a script or footage of scenes being recorded, which means that there is an expectation of, if something leaks about a movie, don't look at it, otherwise you will know something about the final product. And there's a set expectation of, if something about this experience leaks, it's going to be part of the final experience. I either want to see that or I don't. I think that video games, because they have such a long lead-up time on development, there are so many moving parts, there's so many bits of tech or hardware that could be used in different ways, that there is a lot less of a solid expectation of what to expect from a leak. And I think that that might be a factor, just that a leak about a video game could mean so many varying things that it's harder for an audience to perhaps know going in, is this something I would want to know? Is it something I want to stay away from for the final experience? There's less of a clear line of whether that will be the case going in. And that might be a factor in why they're different, but that's the only thing I can think of. I can't think of any other reason, really.
Me neither, beyond people on the internet who like games just being a bit funny about it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, which, you know.
People who like games are a very specific audience, it seems.
Yeah, a very broad but wonderful one, and sometimes very angry.
And I think there may be an element of sort of... it's certainly mean there's a huge amount to talk about, like how the marketing of video games over the last few decades has been about creating a very specific grouping of people. You like games and other people don't. Whereas with film, it was never sort of a subculture thing. Film has always been, everyone likes film. You may like that sort of film, you may like that sort of film, but like everyone likes film, whereas that wasn't the expectation of video games. And so I wonder if like sort of, that's just in many ways has bred a more vociferous audience.
Is it possible that because of the fact that video games have that kind of audience of you are a gamer, like that's your identity, that video games are your thing, that potentially some of it is just annoyance at, wait, I like video games a lot. Why did I not know this thing at the same time as you did, perhaps? That might be a factor?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a tough one. I wish I knew a solid answer. It is interesting that the two are so different in audience responses, I suppose.
Yeah. And just finally then, I just thought, end on a positive. I wanted to know what video computer games, you're just really excited about for this year, because it's the start of the year. I was on the internet phone to America the other day, and we were talking about, you know, what's coming up for February and March even. It's full of really good games. Nier Automata. Have you played that?
Oh, that demo is so good.
Fantastic. Really looking good. It's going to die horribly. Obviously, it's coming out in a really busy month with some small little thing called Mass Effect coming out. But, I mean, I wish it all the best. What I've played is awesome. But, I mean, what are you two really excited about for this year?
I stopped and looked at like the first 3 months of this year the other day. I didn't realize that Horizon Zero Dawn is like the end of February.
Yeah,
so I did not realize it was that soon, and I'm very excited. I'm mainly excited to play it because I got to go hands-on with it at E3, and the E3 show floor demo was like a tiny circle. If you go 10 seconds any direction, you're told to turn around and head back.
It's like a much bigger bit.
You got to play the bigger bit. I only got to do the little bit at E3, and I was like, it was a tantalizingly, annoyingly good tiny space that I was running around.
My favorite fact about that game is I was chatting to one of the developers who revealed that. So I was like, oh, the inspiration for this must be what, Monster Hunter, Shadow of the Colossus, that sort of thing. He's like, yeah. But actually, it was David Attenborough's life. apparently, they were just watching lots of David Attenborough. They're saying, like, this makes the world look beautiful.
See, now someone has to do a video with, you know, Sir David's commentary over some
robot dinosaurs.
I don't want to, you know, I may have been trying to make some outreaches to his people to do such a thing.
To David's people.
Yeah, Mr. Attenborough's. that game looks beautiful.
It looks so good.
It does look great.
The other ones I guess I'm excited for in that first couple of months is Mass Effect Andromeda. I loved everything about the original trilogy. I know some people didn't like the ending of 3. I was fine with it. I liked it. I just want more Mass Effect in my life.
So when Magical Ghost Boy showed up, you're just like, yeah, I'm cool with this.
I was totally cool with Magical Ghost Boy. I thought that the fact that ultimately, no matter what you did, the universe was kind of going to go the same way is like, yeah, there's a bit of futility involved. And that's kind of a nice commentary on life and existence. And maybe I'm just excusing a game that's a bit bad, but it's fine. I enjoyed it, so that's fine.
That's reasonable.
And then the big one being like, oh, I'm so ready for the Switch. I like Nintendo a lot. I know I keep spoiling their things, but I like Nintendo. Yeah. And
but you put those details out there because you like it. That's the thing. If you weren't interested, you wouldn't.
I didn't care about Nintendo, I wouldn't be putting the effort in. But I am excited to just have a new Nintendo console in my life that games are coming to again, because as much as I loved the Wii U as a piece of hardware, there was nothing to... The last 12 months, I think I played Tokyo Mirage Sessions FE. And I think that's the only game that came out this year that I've played on the Wii U.
There was Star Fox, wasn't there?
There was Star Fox. I really wasn't a fan of its control scheme. So that's maybe two games I played in the last 12 months. I want a new Nintendo console with games.
So, and I want it to do well as well. You know, people talk around about, Wii U's going to ruin Nintendo. And of course it's not going to ruin Nintendo because Nintendo got shed loads of money. They're doing quite well, thank you very much. It would be good to see them punching at the right way. You know, and again, what I love about the Switch is, like, obviously they don't give a shit what Xbox or PlayStation are doing. They don't care what those consoles are doing. They're just like, nah, mate, we're Nintendo. We're going to do whatever the hell we want over here.
Good.
Yeah, like, it's great.
When sort of people sort of throw back that thing of like, oh, it has to at least be graphically more superior.
No.
Than this. Like, why? We've got the PS4, we've got the Xbox One. They're two very similar systems who both have wonderful games. But I don't need another one that does the same thing. I want something where it's like, I didn't realize you could do that with a console. Like,
that's exactly why I love Nintendo. I love following and covering and playing Nintendo stuff because it's... You never know quite what to expect. They are always the weird spanner in the works that's like, oh, I guess we play video games like this now. Yeah, sure, I'll give that a try.
And like also, you look at sort of... even if you look at something like the PlayStation, where its differences compared to the Xbox. So you had Tearaway and stuff from Media Molecule. And like that was one where it's like sort of, okay, we've got the PS4 controller, which can do stuff that no other game's controller can do, and it gave you a way to interact with the world that you couldn't get on anything else, and that was really enjoyable. And like with the Nintendo going in a different way with the Switch from other consoles, it means like if developers feel that they can develop games for it and they will make enough money back on it, we could see something which just couldn't exist on the other consoles. And like that's exciting to see, because it's like, we all want games that can't exist on something else.
Yeah, we want new games to be capable of happening. Mm. And Nintendo likes to offer ways to be like, hey, do you want to have these tools to put a game out? I love seeing what Nintendo do. Like, they may stumble sometimes, but I still love them. So, yeah, I want to see how the Switch is received. I want to see how it goes over. And by this time next week, I'll probably have touched one. So that's all good. Yeah.
Do you guys think that it will succeed?
I haven't a clue. Like, what counts as success?
Exactly.
Like,
what do you think? PS4's do you think it'll be
57 million sales? Or do you think it will?
My voice is completely gone. Do you think it will outsell the Wii U?
Without a doubt, I think it will, just by virtue of being portable. I think it will do better in certain markets just by that virtue. There's a very good and a very bad way this can go. Like, it seems like they're trying to consolidate their handheld and their home console markets into one market. And I really hope that the handheld market boosts the home console rather than the home console dragging down the handheld. And I think that by consolidating those two together and hopefully that resulting in a larger amount of first-party releases every year, because you've got twice the first-party studios working on one platform, I'm hoping that the positives and the excitement that's currently behind it transfer into better sales than the Wii U and something that sells well enough that through its whole lifespan it is receiving games. It doesn't die 18 months before its actual death. Mm. I think that would be a success. And I think that this is the best shot Nintendo probably have of making it happen. So Nintendo's in a good position. They just have to not do anything too Nintendo-y at this stage. Don't do the weird thing that ruins everything, Nintendo.
I don't know if I could speak with much knowledge as to whether it will be successful or what success would be. And I think there's certainly an advantage in that it very clearly is a new console, in a way that Wii U, when it first got announced, it was a bit confusing not to call it the Wii 2 or something like that. So it's sort of, I don't know, I think there was a lot of mixed messaging when that console was coming out to really shout to people, there is a new Nintendo console coming out. It does different things because...
They mainly showed off games that had been on the Wii original, but with like here's a tablet. They didn't make it clear that this was a different box. They didn't they didn't pick games that showed off it was a higher resolution, in that it was mainly like Mii games and 2D Mario games that don't show off this is an HD system. They hid the console away and only talked about the controller.
Well, actually, and I suppose they have done that with Switch to a degree, in the sense of that Switch video showing off Splatoon and Mario Kart. It's like, are those new Splatoon games? Is that new Mario Kart, or is that sort of just showing that it still runs Wii games on it? Or
I think what they succeeded at doing with that trailer was they dealt with the biggest hurdle, which is, what is this system? It is something that plays games on your TV. You can unplug it and you can keep playing those games even if you go on a plane or leave the house, go on a plane, go out to the park. It's your console games, but outside and also at home. And like that is a strong enough message that I think they very deliberately left for 3 months to be like, this is the core messaging. It's a home console. It's a handheld. It's both. You're not tethered between one and the other. And next week is basically when we're going to get, here is all of the other information that somewhat muddies that description. But at least we had 3 months where the core message was, it's a home console and a handheld. So
all of that muddying information. Goodness me. On that bombshell, Laura, Julian, thanks for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet, on the Twitter?
You can find me pretty much everywhere at Laura K Buzz. I've got that branding down. Just Laura K Buzz, you'll find all of the things. Otherwise, letsplayvideogames.com.
Consistent branding. Julian, where can people follow you on Twitter?
On Twitter, they can find me at J Benson. And then for reading my words, go to Kotaku UK.
Fantastic. And yeah, please do follow Waypoint on the Twitter and everything else. It's at Waypoint. You can find us on Facebook as well, and Instagram and all that good stuff. And you can find us at waypoint.vice.com. Yeah, thanks very much for listening. Apologies for the coughing and the noise and all the other good stuff that comes with recording a podcast these days. Bye.